one path of least resistance. This is Annie Hardy, and you're listening to this podcast. Tonight is a special episode. We have Thomas. What's your last name, Thomas?
Monaoni.
And what's that? Where are you from?
We are originally from Tyrol, from the northern part of Italy, the Alps.
Oh, wow.
So that's a very typical northern Italian name.
I had no idea. I, for some reason, thought you were like German or something.
Yeah, I grew up in Munich, Germany.
Oh, okay.
But I was born in northern Italy.
Interesting.
In the High Alps near Bergamo.
Oh.
And it didn't used to be always Italy. It is part of Tyrol. It's southern Tyrol.
Mm-hmm.
There's northern Tyrol that's in Austria and southern Tyrol that's in on the Italian side of the famous Brenner Pass,
mm-hmm.
where you go from Italy into, from the boot into Europe. That's the only passageway, and that's kind of where I'm from.
Interesting, interesting. So are your parents from there too?
Yes.
Interesting, because you're O negative blood type.
Yes.
I didn't know there was a large, like, Italian population with the Rh negative blood.
No, it's not very, very common, and it was also in the beginning something that was never assumed, and we didn't know it. I was like, forgot what year it was when they said that's what your blood type is. It was in school, I think. And it's pretty rare.
Very rare. Yeah. I think 6 to 7% of the entire population of the universe has O, specifically O negative, but only 15% of the universe has Rh negative blood and all. It's one of my pet topics to research.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a very interesting element, and I don't think there's any evidence, or we don't really know why that is the case, but I'm not a scientist, neither I'm a doctor, so I really don't know what the reason for that particular blood type is.
But you do know that all the American presidents have been Rh negative, and the royal family is Rh negative, and all that stuff.
I knew it was sometimes, it gets connected with the so-called blue blood, where this comes from, that the royalty has a different blood, a different element. And I always thought it was, as a young kid, when you look at in Bavaria under great kings, the heart is always taken out when a king dies and goes in a specific jar in a different church than where the body is, so that the heart gets separated.
And people, so they don't rise again or something?
No, it's something that people can do to the heart because it's the heart of honor, loyalty, and strength, what belongs to the people. And the great kings always made sure that this heart would be accessible for people to feel the force of the king still. And in French monarchy houses, you have sometimes the same. And these are these little jars, almost like, look like European versions of a canoptic jar. The heart is in there and the body is in a different church in a different city.
Wow. That's what, they just let the body hang out there for like a long time or what?
They go usually in a sarcophagus, and then the heart goes where people can kind of have a connection with it and trying to be with that kind of line with the strength of the king that it wouldn't go away.
Right, that's crazy.
And blue blood, I think, is something. I always saw the fawn, the name fawn, or the bloodline that comes there. It's also interesting to see if you get the title thrown up onto you because of heroic deeds, and sometimes it happened in the history of Europe that somebody got adeled, we call it in Germany, became nobility. But most of those titles were just for their lifetime. It didn't stay with the family.
Right.
It's if somebody did something extraordinary for the king or for the kingdom, or, then they would get this fawn title. But very often this was really just for their lifetime. It would go to the kids or to the offspring or to the other family. And blue bloods are definitely a little bit different.
Yeah, well, my understanding of it is the Illuminati believe they're the 13 descended bloodlines of Lucifer. And then, like, they would all be the same blood types as, you know, the Merovingian blood type of Jesus. And, like, I know for my blood type, every time there's a Catholic miracle and some statue weeps blood and whatever, the Shroud of Turin, they test that blood, and it's always AB negative, which is the rarest type of the world. And so, you know, it would seem that the Holy Grail was actually the bloodline of Jesus, which could be AB negative. Knock on wood, I hope that's the truth. And then, you know, I don't know what that makes A and B. But, like, yeah, a lot of O, you know, I hear the royal families all O negative. And it's so weird because last night I had a dream featuring all people I know who are O negative. I'm mm-hmm. fairly obsessed with this. So I go around blood testing all the people I know if they mm-hmm. look like they fit the bill. Tall people, people with green or blue eyes, mm-hmm. you know. But then once in a while, I have some brown-haired, brown-eyed people, and I'm like, well, you mm-hmm. know, it doesn't follow any rules, so what do I know? I could be wrong about everything.
Yeah, I always was very interested in Padre Pio. He's one of my great saints, and I don't know what blood type he was, but Padre Pio is one of those now saints that I think is an incredible miracle that is so out of the ordinary.
Mm-hmm.
The stigmata itself is very out of the ordinary. And
oh, yeah, he had stigmata, didn't he?
Yes, every mass, even the last mass that he did the day he died, sometimes he bled profusely out of his hands and out of his... Yeah. And it's also, I don't know if it's just a story that came with it, is that towards the end, and when he died, when he was passing away, there was no blood in him anymore. It was all gone.
And then did his body... Because to get sainthood, don't they, like, observe your body and your body doesn't rot? It just stays, like...
Well, I think they put him a little bit away, but during his lifetime, the church didn't want him to do mass because mm-hmm. he always wanted to do mass, and the church, because so many people responded to his mass and seeing the stigmata
mm-hmm.
up live, and there were many, many people were witnessing his mass, and the church didn't like that it took his church away for a while, his personal church, and had somebody else doing it. It took quite a while till they let him go again. And I think it's good to read about Padre Pio, and there's some good documentaries about him. He was also seen at two different places around the same time. So there's a lot of stuff that might be just lore, but there's a lot of stuff that is really interesting. The stigmata is one of my things that I really...
Stigmata is interesting.
Very interesting.
Right now, there's a Bible somewhere in America that's like weeping oil, like mm-hmm. nonstop, and has been for a few months. They got to keep it in some giant bucket because it just keeps oil coming out of it. And it's the kind of thing where you're like, you know, I'll subscribe to that, but it could be just like somehow a bunch of bullshit. But I feel like it's real.
Well, there's a lot of stuff that I always thought Joan of Arc is one of my great heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's many things there that we don't quite understand, and,
yeah.
and because we are not witness to it. But she was very young when she led a huge army and fought battles and had conversations with a higher being.
Totally.
And it's for me so hard to put a value and a judgment on it. But mm-hmm. I find it extraordinary that a person would die at the stake and just say, you know, this is my connection with God. And you will not take that away. And she didn't want to have sex. She thought it would ruin the whole connection with God. And
she was right, probably.
She could have been right, yes. But it's just extraordinary. And she was very young also when she died. But she let many, many people into a battle who believed her, and she had this energy that is not of the ordinary nature.
Mm-hmm.
There is something attached to it that is just incredible. I went to places where she went to. I went to the place where she got burned, and you can still feel it. You know what happened there, and there's plenty of saints and churches that are miraculous. And I have to say one thing. What I say tonight or what we talk about, this is purely my opinion, my experience in my life. It's not a tool to say this is how it is. So
right.
I think each human has to process information about life on their own terms.
Definitely.
And find their way. It's better to look inward than outward.
Yeah, definitely. I know that if I hadn't had all of these things that have happened in my life happen, I would not... You know, the old me from a decade ago, if she could hear today me and what I believe now, she would be embarrassed probably and just be like, what the fuck? Because I'm doing like a tiny, 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 tiny fraction of Joan of Arc, just as far as ego goes. Like, I know that this shit I believe in for me is so real that I'm willing to talk about it and, like, lower my status from cool to, you know, possibly crazy, but maybe right. You know, just by, like talking about God is something that people don't like to talk about, at least here in L.A.
Yes. It's also, sorry for my heavy accent, also sometimes you probably won't understand me, but then just interrupt me. But I think that I don't like even the fact of being an anti-Christian or anti-Muslim. So I can't be anti-anything because everybody has the right to believe and to have faith in what speaks to them, and I can't judge that, and I don't really care. It's not of my business.
Same with me.
The only thing that's important to me that I make sense out of why I'm here, what I'm doing, and what I consider is living a good life. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's very important that I'm not anti anything. I'm not anti Christian as long as they. Not telling me what to do.
Yeah, totally. I think that's like where the problem comes. It's like people who are assured of what, you know, I don't care what anybody does, but I think it says in the Bible, like, you do got to tell people, like, you know, look, turn from your evil ways or you're screwed. And then once you tell them that, then it's off your, like, that's the only thing. But I think that gets misconstrued where people are like, you must repent or you're going to hell. It's like, I don't know if that's a for sure thing. I don't know what happens when we die. I'm prone to believe what I believe now based on what I've experienced. But, well, why don't you tell us, you were raised in Thelema, right?
Yes.
And so will you tell people what that means?
Oh boy, this would probably take a long time.
Well, how about I tell them what I think it means? It's like, so this was something developed by Aleister Crowley.
Yes.
And it's like, it has to do with, like, you know, do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law.
Love is the law, love under will.
Yeah, love under will. I don't totally understand what that means. Like, will over love?
Well, a will is much different than want.
Right.
It's not connected at all. And will is something that is for us to find. And I think to start out with that is one of the most important things to come to terms is that a similar way the old Gnostics, you looked, do you have an external God or you internalize Christ? Is Christ the one that's outside of you? Is he within you?
Right.
And I always, when I look at icons, you look at this famous painting with Christ knocking on the door.
Mm-hmm.
This is a famous iconic painting.
I got that one in the guest room.
And you look at that, and you look at the door, and then you ask a person, what is different with this door? This is the only door in the world that is like that. Look at it. And then most people don't even know what's different with the door. But when you look really close, you see very quick that there's no doorknob. You can't open.
Oh.
He can't open the door.
Right.
You have to open your heart from the inside.
Oh, interesting.
So that shows me there that in essence, it's your Christos. It's that part in this old mythology.
It's the Christ consciousness.
Yes, that is highest being of you, the flame that burns in every heart of man.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not easily accessible because the lower self of us, this lowest being, this beast being that we have in ourselves that causes lust and gluttony and all these traditional elements or human behaviors that go into this lower self because we have to survive, we have to live, we want to be famous. Or some people want to be famous, some people want to be rich. And this comes not from the Christ. This comes from
ego.
An ego.
Yeah, the lower self.
And the ego is not necessarily your friend. You need the ego to live, but it's not necessarily your friend. And it's also not the friend of the highest self.
Right. Because it's in survival mode all the time. And it's just, it hates change. And it's trying to keep you from changing. But it's ultimately, it has a good intent. It's trying to keep you safe.
Yes.
But a lot of times that means keeping you from new experiences.
And it also is aware that it's mortal. Your highest being is, this is not written in stone, but for me this is this immortal self, this energy that is just love. And now we're coming to this point of love. And the lower self. Between humans is a different love. When we look at the Greek word of eros, this is the love between humans, between you and me or whoever is your partner. And it comes and goes. We all have been there. We fall in love with somebody, and then
two years later, they
do something. You fall out of love. Mm-hmm. So it's eros.
Yeah.
With the Cupid that shoots the arrow in you, and you're in love. But there's in the highest being is agape, mm-hmm. and agape is this unconditional love between you and God, and God and you. That there's nothing else to offer. It the highest self does not understand the stuff the ego does. They're not friends. They are not enemies, but they don't understand each other's role. What the ego understands is that the highest self is very powerful and it's immortal. And it gives you agape, it gives you true love. And that's what your lower self can't really give you. Because on many occasions in life, we have to be in love with ourselves. Mm-hmm. And not eros, but it's agape.
Yeah.
Because we all need, maybe I'm talking too much for my soapbox now, but as humans, we need salvation and redemption. Mm-hmm. It has to come from somewhere. Without salvation and redemption, we will be struggling
in
certain moments, especially when the end comes. Because we know that we can deceive humans all the time. Even your friends you can lie to and have a total different way of looking at things, but you yourself know when you're lying.
Right.
And when you're not truthful. But in these moments, in Africa, there's a little tradition that I encountered. They have these three heartbeats, what they always say, when you go to sleep, these three heartbeats before you fall asleep, you know what you did good and what you did bad in the day. Mm. And the same happens when you die. The judgment doesn't come from a guy sitting in the clouds with a big white beard. The judgment comes from within you.
So what do you think happened? I mean, my first question is, can you be sure that there's not some final judgment? Like, is there any part of you that's like, fuck, what if I'm wrong about all this? And then Jesus and God and shit is real.
Well, I truly think that they're real. I don't know if I can say that as a person real externally hanging on the cross, wherever we go with that in this all-powerful force, but I consider them much more powerful because they're within me, and I have to face that judgment of my action, of my life, and mm-hmm. how I treat people around me, very severe. And judgment will come.
Right.
And like I said, this is purely my understanding of it, but judgment, our moral and ethic laws in our societies change all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And they were different probably 2,000 years ago, 1,000 years ago, 100 years ago. They were different than they are now. But what we do and how we interact again between this lower self and the higher self, they have to become harmonious.
Mm-hmm.
This wonderful word, the logos that comes from heaven goes within you, this white dove that usually a priest in your baptism or confirmation mm-hmm. gives you in the confirmation, the logos, puts the logos in you. And hopefully we can nourish that and we come to connect with this agape, with this highest force of, and then we find, if we are good with that, we find salvation and redemption somewhere. Because the end we all don't know. We call it the greater feast when we go on to the next state, and we don't know how it will feel, but on my own terms, I have to come to a conclusion and to an understanding of it that I can live a life that I consider is hopefully okay and good, and I hopefully don't hurt anybody, or I don't want to people think that my way is the right way, or it could be the total wrong way, but definitely. It makes sense to me.
Right. So you think that like God and Jesus and the devil and demons are just kind of a construct of man, and that this is all, it's all kind of like we're a microcosm of the whole universe, and the salvation comes through you being, I'm like, where do you get your guidelines for what is a good person?
Well, it's, if we say, do whatsoever will shall be the whole of the law, love is the law, love and the will, we have to grant it to every person. Every person has to write to eat what he wants to eat, to drink what he wants, to say what he wants to say, to dress the way he wants to dress,
mm-hmm.
to live according to his will. And it's not only for us, it's for everybody else in this world. And we have to understand that each person has that right. And in the Book of the Law, in the first chapter, there's a wonderful line that always scarred me. It says, every man and every woman is a star. It has no connection to black, white, yellow, red, of the different races, ethnic groups. It just says every man and every woman is a star. And for me, that's kind of, yeah, sometimes we collide, some burn brighter than other ones, but it is a pretty important statement. Yes.
Yeah.
And individuation, I think it is the part that happened like 2,000 years ago with the Christians, where all of a sudden we were not thinking so much collectively. We were away, I'm Annie, I'm Thomas. We come to understand that we are getting individuated, and we have to find a way what that means, being individuated. Are we now God? Are we becoming God? Or are we becoming a person that we still have to live with other humans, but we understand that it's about us, and we all of a sudden understand that this life is about us, and this life is about how we look at things and how we treat other people. And selfishness is, I think, in any way, shape, or form, it's you have to look at these trademarks, how you can handle them, how you're okay with it.
And, totally.
And Christ and God and Buddha and whatever God form you accept in your life, it's all good. It only has to work for you.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to work for me. It has to work for you. And sin, whatever sin is, that's you have to define according to your own understanding. If you know thyself, when you know yourself, and I think then you come to a better understanding. If it's lying a sin? Yes, I think it is.
Oh, definitely lying.
And we agree on that. And I think it's deceiving humans, and it's can be a sin. It can be sometimes helpful. I mean, I had friends, my mentors are all passed away, and I witnessed their deaths, and I was right there. When they asked me, will it be okay, what would I say? Do I say,
it might not.
Yeah,
you may want to, just in case it's real. That's what I would have said. You know, just in case this shit is not totally made up. Just accept Jesus right on your way out. You know, just in case. Well, I forget who made that idea up, that theory, like, just in case it is the real shit, you maybe should just get down and do the minimal. Because I guess, you know, most people believe that in order to be saved, have salvation, all you got to do is admit with your mouth that Jesus Christ is Lord, that he died on the cross, rose again 3 days later, and that's allegedly all it takes.
But it's also, like I said, the moment is that, is Christ real? Is Christ internal or external? And these are the things that each human has to figure out on their own.
Right.
And the last rites, that every human has those last rites. And every priest in the Catholic Church will tell you, if you have a dying human there, you will administer those. This is a birthright of humans. We all have that in common, because at that particular moment, if the darkness don't go in death, then we carry that forever. Because you have to lift the darkness off, and Christ is a perfect vessel, conductor for that.
Yeah. What do you think about the people who have had near death experiences where they've gone to hell, they've cried out for Jesus, and he comes and whisks them off to heaven, and then says, "All right, now you've seen it. Like, go back and tell everybody what you've just seen." What do you think those are about?
Well, I think there's moments in our consciousness that are like very not understandable. When I had my cancer, I remember parts of it. I was in tremendous pain. I had to, testicular cancer is one of those things that's really very dreadful. And it was 20-something years ago. And the only way that the painkillers didn't help until I had my surgery, I spent like 6 weeks, and most of the time sitting in hot water bathtub, it was the only thing where it didn't hurt. And sleeping was sometimes very difficult. And I had moments in there where I knew what I had, where doctors still said, we're going to do an exploratory surgery and see if it's cancer or not. And I knew, you know intrinsically that something is really wrong. And there I seen things, if I would go and say it's Christ, for me it's this Christos, and I have a different understanding of Christos, this person in me that's really high, this, we call it very often the Holy Guardian Angel. That is there for you. That's your understanding of your higher being. And that's unconditional. And I think every human person is a holy guardian angel, but some people get away from it in this.
Is that like the higher self?
That's the higher self, okay. Yes. The higher self that is also not connected with the lower self. And as so many people think, not everybody has it. I truly believe we all have it. Sometimes we are very far removed from it. And then it's difficult. And we, in the ego, we make plenty of mistakes in our life. And
oh, for sure.
When we are in the ego, salvation and redemption is hard to come by.
It's very impossible.
Hard to come by, yes.
I believe that, you know, the Bible says there's like 144,000 souls only will get into heaven. Mm-hmm. But I heard some theory that there's only 144,000 living souls on earth right now. Mm-hmm. And the rest are like basically like these soulless like drone bot beings who are just kind of like vessels for, you know, spirits to occupy, whether they be negative or positive. And I sort of believe that because there seem to be a lot of just extra filler people around who aren't at all connected to like what's going on here.
Yes.
They're just like TV, cars, having sex, eating food, you know, whatever.
It's also, this is a different understanding. The early Christians and some of Salema believed that this world was created by a demiurge. By a false god. And it comes from that point that with all the problematic part we have, we get separated from the source, from the real God, and we come into this world. We are it is the demiurge created everything. It's the work of the archons. Mm-hmm. And this is their playing field. Mm-hmm. That's how these things happen. And we have to deal with them. But we will eventually go back to the source where we came from. And I always feel there's a very good understanding of it because the experience what I had in my life always related that this moment before I'm born, I see this is probably the same way after I go to my greater feast. Birth itself is a very difficult thing. Imagine you, the biggest magical act what humans can do is creating life, creating an egregore. There's nothing bigger than that.
Mm-hmm.
And I also encountered that most, like women, once they have kids, it changes dramatically their outlook on life if they are healthy.
Completely.
It's incredible. It's incredible to watch how this motherly aspect takes over and makes most of them, if they are aware, wonderful human beings.
Yeah, because you really realize like the golden rule, which is in every religion, like the treat other people the way that you would like to be treated, like you really... It becomes something that you can feel like and that you really understand on a deeper level once you have a child and you're like, oh, shit, like this matters. Like everything that I do matters. Everything I say and all the ways I treat people is important.
Well, and for me, the looking at like paradise is when you are made in the womb these 9 months till you are all of a sudden a day away of coming on this planet from nowhere. It's literally paradise if your mother is aware that she's pregnant and
communicates with you.
And you have the same blood pressure, the same temperature, the same heartbeat, and it's wonderful. You get fed. Unless she takes drugs or things become bad. Then it's all tainted. But in this case, you're in paradise. You don't have to do anything. And then comes this moment where you have to go through this birth canal, and then comes this. For me, in the sad, absolute dreadful moment, your umbilical cord gets cut.
You're separated.
You are separated. Never be back again. All of a sudden, you have to breathe on your own. Your heartbeat has to start on your own. And you are not in paradise anymore.
Yeah.
You are, there I am.
Yeah.
And this world, and for me, is very flawed.
Oh, yeah.
It's a very flawed world. And there, I feel... that when we go to our greater feast and conscious to our greater feast, when we die of older age and not by accident in our young days, we can die today, something could happen and I don't understand what happened, I'm just dead.
Yeah.
But I have the slight feeling that we die a natural death, we come to a better understanding what this greater feast means and it will be okay again. I will go back to the source. That's, I think, is an outlook that I can subscribe to.
Yeah, definitely. So wait, but what about the fact that Aleister Crowley says, like, because I'm so far, I'm with you. I subscribe to all these ideas, pretty much. But then, like, in my studying of things, like, Aleister Crowley also said that the talked about vampirizing energy and the best source of that being a three-year-old white male, like sodomizing three-year-old white males.
I'm not sure about this right now, but I can tell you how I look at Crowley, maybe to explain a little bit what Crowley means for me as a Thelemite. It's like the Book of the Law, the book that he received and wrote down. And for the longest time, he didn't understand it. He didn't like it, and he didn't know what to do with it. So it was laying dormant, and he didn't print it. But I see it in a very specific way. If somebody goes up onto the mountain, like even the Hollywood Mountain, and spends a week there, and he gets information.
Right. Channels.
And he comes down, and I walk up. I want to go to this mountain, too. I want to see what's going on. And he comes down there, or she, and says, on the other side of the street, and says, Thomas, come over here for a second. And I go there and said, I was up there. I spent a year up there. I got this book. Here, take it. You can have it. It's yours. And I ask him, so what's in the book? And said, read it. That's what is there. Crowley never tells you what to do and what it means. And if you are into the Thelemic way, if you have the Thelema in your blood, the Book of the Law will eventually make sense. There's a discordic knot that can untangle, and we have to be careful when we read books like that, that the poetic language that are written in, that we don't take it literally. There's many moments when you take poetic language literally that you get into trouble.
Right.
When you say sacrifice a child in Hermetic.
I think it was just like sodomizing them, but maybe it was sacrificing.
Sacrificing a child is in a Hermetic sense, is masturbation, because you sacrifice the sperm and it doesn't go to a fruitful ground. And from a Hermetic standpoint, this is something you shouldn't necessarily look at in that way of that moment that you kill a child or kill a baby. But now the sperm, the semen is... There's nothing will happen. And this is, in a certain position, a waste, a very selfish act. And we just have to sometimes look at what language, poetic language, means. And we have that same in the Bible. It's a poetic language.
Right.
And we have to look at what actually the message is in there, and not taking it. If you take poetic language literally, I think then we can get in trouble really, really fast.
Do you know what the quote is that it says, like, about?
I don't know what you're referring. Do you know what book you read it in? Did you read it?
No, I can't tell you at this moment. But it's one of those things I hear over and over again, that, and that he called himself, he believed he was the reincarnation of Baphomet.
Of Elias Levi, that was his thought, that he was reincarnated. And there is parts of that that I think, reincarnation is more to me like a spiritual element where you harness an energy that was here before. Is Jimi Hendrix connected to Mozart? I think so. Because these energies go somewhere through and go to certain people and have that part and give you that power and give you that understanding of life. And from poets to artists to book writers and whatever else we have, there is a certain understanding, a certain bloodline that goes through there.
Right. Well, people who are Rh negative, which I wouldn't be surprised if Crowley was, are like super, like just portals of spiritual energy. And they're all like, we're all more easily possessed by entities than regular people.
And that's why I think drugs, Crowley wrote Diary of a Drug Fiend because he was addicted to drugs. And he didn't like it. In Thelema, this is something that you want to have your control over yourself.
Right.
And he did not like that too much, but sometimes it's hard to overcome because it
definitely
makes us feel good. Sex can make us feel good and music can make us feel good. But we forget in the meantime that we have to be good with ourselves, that we have an understanding of ourselves. And for Crowley, it was a battle till the end, but he was very open with it. He didn't pretend to like it has everything under control. He said, you know,
Didn't he use a lot of drugs in his ceremony, his black magic rituals and stuff?
No, certain elements, yes, maybe. You find it in Africa, where I spent many, many years and grew up in Namibia, that a lot of mind, you find it in Native Americans, you find Ayahuasca ceremonies.
Oh, yeah.
Where we do it is in a religious setting, not as a recreational drug.
Right.
You know, if we start doing recreational, heroin is a recreational drug or whatever it is, it's kind of useless. You become a
fool.
Cuts
you off from
the source.
Yeah.
And that is my understanding with it. It's the same, the understanding, the sorcerer and the conjurer. The conjurer, the magic, is this black magician. He conjures things up. And very low magic. The sorcerer is a little bit different. As the name says, he comes off the source. So it's a different understanding where your working comes from. And drugs taint everything.
Yeah.
And if you do religious drugs that you do once a year for a ceremony or once every 6 months for the solstices, then I think they serve a purpose.
Definitely.
So does sacrifice. We look at sacrifice always in Africa. Sacrifice is not a daily order, but it's one of the tools we use. And people said, I couldn't sacrifice an animal. And it's very difficult to come to an understanding of what that means. If I'm a hopeless drug addict, and in my society, very important is like the rooster or the cow or the goat, and I cannot get out of my drug use, and I spend time with that animal, it's the rooster, and I tell him, you know, I promise you I will never do drugs again. Is there a possibility, if you give your life and I take you on, that I can stop this? And then the sacrifice of that animal becomes that promise that you will never do drugs again. It's not yourself sacrifice, it's a sacrifice of somebody else's life. And if you value that, then all of a sudden it gets a different undertone.
So is that, but when these people who are like, you know, part of the evil cabal that sort of run things in this world, when they're sacrificing children or famous people, I can't imagine that that's what they're doing.
No, I agree with you. And I don't know anything about that because I've never witnessed it. So I have a tendency to stay clear of that because the only thing I can clean in my life is my surrounding, where I stand, what I can do. I cannot clean, and I don't care. I don't want to clean up your act or anybody else's act or look too much into that.
Right.
I have a hard time keeping my side of the street clean. And this is probably also one of those things why I don't really like to be politically too engaged, because it's something that's further away from me. The first thing that matters is my girlfriend, is my family, is my friends, then my city, then my county, and then my nation that I'm part of. And until I get to other things, what happens else in the world, that is the last thing on my agenda. I want to keep everything okay, but I can control a little bit and make sure that everybody else is okay. What they do in politics, I don't know enough about it, and I don't think things change that drastically, but it requires for me being educated, and it requires for me a little bit too to be okay with myself.
Yeah, I mean, politics are just a no-win situation, especially these days. And I think, like, you know, political issues such as, like, transgenders and stuff like that, it's just like, you know, I don't know about you, but I believe in biblical end times as promised by the Bible. I think we're there, you know. The Bible says, like, in the end, like, everybody's going to, like, be offended, which everybody is offended now, and everybody's gonna, like, you know, men will become lovers of themselves, like the narcissist pandemic that's happening. You know, there's an epidemic of loneliness that's a side effect of that. And just like, you know, I hate to revisit this, but so you do not believe in demon spirits, or do you?
Oh, I believe in, when you look at goetic demons, when you look at these elements of spirits in our flesh and blood, and I don't know if you're familiar with these old kind of paintings from the Victorian age where, like, four naked women make an old man's head who smokes a pipe, these kind of weird paintings.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
So, and in the old Hermetics, these spirits that existing that are drawn out in Dictionnaire Infernal, they make you. This is, comes in the flesh and blood when we are this egregore. We all have those same things within us. And we have to be careful. We have to master them all. We have to be the Christ, the master for all of them. If we let one guy run havoc with it, we become a hopeless drug addict. We might be okay with something, but we become a hopeless drug addict.
Mm-hmm.
And we play by their rules. What they don't have for you, these spirits, and I don't necessarily think they're very clever. They've been around for a longer time than we are.
Yeah.
They're on this planet since however old it is, whatever you believe in it is. But what they don't have for you is love. Agape they don't have for you. They want you.
Yeah.
You are a notch in their belt, and essentially they want your demise. They want you to be on their side.
And why do they want that, do you think?
Because they come of this lower self. They want in this world create that power. This is this Archon element, this Demiurge who wants to control this and not doesn't want to get you to salvation and redemption.
Okay.
And I have that. Salvation and redemption is something really big because I've seen people die who did not have that, and it's an absolute torment.
Mm.
It comes, I think, with the territory somewhere there that we somehow our sins, what we did, we need to have an understanding of them, and also know that we have to forgive ourselves.
Right.
If we can't forgive ourselves, everything is a moot point. That's the part within Christ. For me, he's inside of me.
Mm-hmm.
For you, he might be. And I don't want to speak for you.
He's both. Yes. He's inside me and on the outside of me.
Yes.
Because I think of it as like, you know, inside my body are a bunch of cells and stuff working together to make me run.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of like a microcosm of God, who we're all inside of the body of God, and we all have our own consciousness, and we work together to sort of create the body of Christ, as they call it.
No, you're right. And I have so many kind of strange understandings of it when he hangs on the cross, and he wants you to let go at a certain point in time because he promises you resurrection.
Yeah.
And for me, it is this moment of... we hang on the cross with all our earthly battles that we have to fight, our ego that puts us into bad positions. And as long as we don't let go of them, as long as we stick with these pains, we're going to hang on this cross forever and bleed, and it's painful. If we let go, if we finally let go of these things, we will get resurrected. We wake up the next day probably more relaxed and better than we were before because we don't have this temptation or we don't have the thing that destroys our life and our livelihood anymore. And
totally.
And like I said, it's for me very hard to, maybe I sound overly concerned, that I think that every person has the right to believe what they want to believe.
Definitely.
And what works for them.
Yeah, they have to believe because that's like free will, you know?
Yes.
God wants us to come. I believe all God wants from any of us is to seek to know him.
Yes.
And that's it, you know? And God is love. So that means the purpose of this life is to seek to better know and understand love. And that's all God wants. And then I believe on the flip side, the devil is just fear, because that fear will keep you from seeking to know God. Because when you're like living in a survival mode, in a fight or flight state, worried about what other people think, which I used to be very worried about before, you know, because once you accept Jesus, like you can't really care what other people think because it's not a good look. It's just not in Los Angeles. It makes you look like a psycho, and it makes people automatically believe that you hate gay people, that you're racist. Like, it's ridiculous. It's like, but it's also interesting because anyone who is accusing me of something that I've never accused anyone of, because I don't have that kind of hate in my heart, they're just kind of showing me their truth. Like, oh, you think I don't like gay people? Well, you don't like gay people, you know?
Yeah, no, I understand. I totally understand it. And I also look at churches in a different way. It's a holy place, synagogues, but it's also... It's not a home for saints. It's a hospital for sinners.
Yeah.
And we always have to remember that because it gnaws on us. We can hide it away and we can put it in a safety deposit box somewhere, what we consider sins, good or bad. We consider that and we know what we did wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And where do we get that moment? And somehow in churches and synagogues and temples, we can try to find that way out of that a little bit. And I think that's important for humans, especially when they're conscious. And love, in this world here, in the English language, love is love is love is love. There's mm-hmm. no big difference. Like I said, the Greeks had, I think it was four words, and big one between Eros and Agape. Mm-hmm. There's different loves there, and Eros is mundane. Eros will come and go.
Yeah.
It's not forever. And we have to understand there's different categories of love, and that's, I think, what we have to first rectify and find in ourselves.
And then find God's love, which is totally, I was just telling someone the other day, unconditional love asks nothing in return, and it just is. And it's, you don't, I was saying, you don't necessarily love me if your love is contingent on what I'm giving to you.
Yes.
Or if I'm seeing you, or if I'm sleeping with you, or whatever, whatever. That is not love. That is an addiction to pleasure of the way that somebody makes you feel.
Of the flesh.
Yeah,
it's
totally.
Still of the flesh. And I also believe that certain notions in the society, I always believe you don't have to do anything. When mm-hmm. you're born, we always said you have to do this, you have to go to do certain things. And I always believe I have the right, if I don't want to do anything, if I want to live in a cardboard box in Hemet,
yeah,
I can do that.
Totally.
No disrespect for Hemet, but I'm just throwing this out or wherever it is. I just don't want to do anything. I have that right. If then my friends tell me you need a roof over your head, you need to do this or that, I don't have to do anything.
Yeah, totally.
That's how it starts. And when I have not to do anything, then I can lay up onto it what I would like to do in according to my will.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of people, I think, who go through this world and do things that have nothing to do with their higher calling or with their will.
Most people, I would say.
Yes. And that's a shallow life.
That is a shallow life. It's a shallow, thankless life, too, because, I think, actually, Thelema has something in it about self-actualization, self-realization. Mm-hmm. Man, maybe I am this. No, I can't be. But I became self-actualized, and as soon as it happened, I realized that all my purpose in this world is to just be of service to other people, and that's where, meaning, and, once you're fulfilled in life and you realize, okay, this is what I'm here for, this is my purpose, and you have that moment of oneness, the philanthropy is the next natural step. But most people will never, ever get to that moment because they're going to be at work at their shitty asshole job.
Yeah, right.
Learning to hate the world and not experiencing what a magical world we live in, the laws of spiritual laws, like the law of least effort, which dictates that you do the minimal work, you just are a good person, and, it's a breeze. Success happens, whatever, whatever. And that's sad.
Because they are slaves. They're not masters. And you become a slave easily to your house, to your cars, and you have to pay all these off. And you wanted this, you want that. And before you know it, you're a slave for the rest of your life.
Yep.
And I kind of despised it on my own. I want to be able to say, by tomorrow morning, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
I have no interest in this. I don't even want to take a job anymore. I'm on this planet quite long enough, and I never really cared about that. I care about that I do what I feel like is in me and what I would like to express and what I would like to feel and what I would like to achieve in my daily life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely not paying bills and buying a bigger house and having a better car and whatever it is that people think makes them happy.
Although you do have a pretty nice car,
I must say. it took me a long time to get there, but it's something that I'm a custodian of it for a little bit, and it will go to somebody else. I don't see it as my possession as much. It's a fun thing to do, and it brings a tremendous smile to people. I haven't heard anybody who said, my God, that this is so pretentious, because I don't like pretentious things.
Yeah.
I don't like to be out there, and I just like, in a certain way, sometimes to have feelings that make me okay,
What is your astrology sign?
Oh, I'm a Leo.
Leo.
21st of August, so I'm right...
On the cusp with Virgo?
Yes.
Nice. I'm a Leo moon. Do you know what your rising and moon are?
I don't remember. Now, what is it again, Michelle?
Libra rising.
Libra rising, yes.
Cancer moon. Oh, there's a little sensitivity in there.
So, So I always, in certain moments in life, you have these kind of watersheds where everything becomes very difficult, and in these difficult times comes this, is it an aha moment, or where you encounter yourself, this scar.
Dark night of the soul type thing.
Yes, and then we come out, and that's the winter solstice, this wonderful part. We are not too far away from the winter solstice. It's the longest night and the shortest day. So there's darkness all around us.
Don't like it. Not a fan of that.
No, but there's the promise, and we know it gets longer.
Yeah.
So when it's the darkest point in your life, and if you have this logos, if you have the light will come.
Mm-hmm.
It will come back to you. It's cyclical. And I think that has to be a harmony between light and dark. Darkness doesn't... can't be on its own.
Yeah, darkness can't. I mean, the light actually can be on its own in my line of belief, because the light is what created the darkness, so it could see another aspect of itself.
In a hermetic sense, yes. But in a world sense, in how it's manifested in the flesh and blood, that the darkness will always be there, because it's this part of this duality.
Yeah.
Love, and then hate is not the counterpart of love.
It's fear.
There's indifference and stuff, irreverence, and there are so many things in there. But we live in dualities. We live in day and night. We live in all these moments, engagement and disengagement. And so it's really important to understand where we stand as humans, as an individual.
Yeah.
The individuation of us, what we talked earlier about, is the most important thing, that we come to terms with that and then explore ourselves, know ourselves, and be in love with ourselves. I know people who can't be without somebody else. They always need a partner.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's always a terrible understanding of yourself. You have to be somehow alone, this hermit experience, to know what you can rely on, and that you get information from your highest self, that you get a guideline for your life. And Christos, Christ is a perfect example of guiding you if you use it in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
If you use it saying this is the only way in the world and nobody else is right, then we have a problem.
Right.
But if it works for you, great, it's great.
Well, yeah, I mean, Christians can't even say that, because, you know, before Christians was the Jews, and they're God's chosen people, whatever, and they're not doing anything wrong, you know. They've got the automatic slide into heaven, if there is one. And then, yeah, I mean, it's just tricky, because even everything you're saying, I agree with all of it. But I've also heard a saying called, the devil gives you 99% truth, so you believe the 1% lie, which would be that Jesus Christ is not the Son of God, didn't walk the earth, didn't die on the cross, and rise again. Well, the reason I believe that that's just true is because I have seen miracles worked in Jesus' name.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen crazy demon devil shit. And if there's no Jesus, I can't imagine there's a devil or demons. Like, what are they the counter of, you know?
Well, I always think when I go into certain areas, and then certain areas of the city, it's very demonic to me. It's like it's like Dante's Inferno. It's right there. It plays out with the characters.
Yes.
And I don't want to mention any parts, then this part of the city gets offended by it.
Right.
But there's parts in L.A.
I'm looking at you, though, downtown.
there we go. And this is absolute, it's an infernal state, you know. And I also think that humans need company. We need other humans. When we separate ourselves from other humans and we live a lonely hermit life, It's
which is what the devil wants to do, is get everyone isolated and away from their support networks. So they'll commit suicide ultimately.
You're absolutely right. And that's and what we are talking about right now, we come from total different understandings, or we think from different understandings.
Yeah.
But this apex on top of this pyramid, when you look at the bottom of the pyramid, there's all these stones, really long lines, and it goes up, and we all look for the truth. And on the top of this pyramid is this all-seeing eye. There's this apex, this light. And for all these traditions, we all look for the same thing. And there's different ways how to get there. We just have to make sure that we get to that point of the apex of the light.
And that's the eye of Horus?
You could see it like this. I always look at it like this old moments in old Las Vegas. There was this, when the Luxor was built in the beginning, they just had this straight white light going straight into the heaven.
Right.
And when you drove there, you saw it from like whatever, 60 miles away or 70 mm-hmm. miles away. And I always thought it was very good to see this because that's the top of the pyramid. There's no other way to go. And that's where we all want to be. There's the truth to that. Everything on the lower side, what the preachers tell you,
right.
what the books tell you, that might be all okay, but we shouldn't forget we have to go all the way up. We can't stay on the bottom part and then spout out all this nonsense, what people say that's the best way.
Yeah.
We have to
elevate
ourselves.
You can't just regurgitate information. You have to experience it for yourself.
Yes.
And that's what I've done, because as crazy as it makes me look, I started trying out like deliverance, mm-hmm. you know, casting out demons in Jesus' mm-hmm. name, casting them out of technology. You know, I'm always having technology problems, which could be my Rh negative blood, mm-hmm. which is copper based and not iron like the rest of the world. But, you know, everywhere I go, technology like malfunctions. And so I found out that there were all these electronic technology interference demons. If you cast them out, you know, 9 times out of 10, it fixes a problem.
See, and it works for you. And so you have an understanding how to work your world, your universe. And,
mm-hmm.
and in my ways, I have the same thing. I kind of know what's coming. I kind of know how it plays out. And
mm-hmm.
and I've seen people coming over and over again. It's the same story, just played with different characters. And it's the same falseness, the same deception, the same lower self that comes again and wants to get you. It's always the same thing. The temptation
totally.
Comes always from the weakest point, not from your strongest point.
Oh, definitely.
And that's that part we have to acknowledge.
Yeah.
At a
certain
point.
As the Bible says, resist the devil and he will flee from you. But resisting is the hardest part.
Yes.
You get very short-sighted. You want what you want right now. But as they say in AA, God's will feels bad now, but good later. And our will feels good now and bad later.
Well, it's the definition of will. That's this part. I always think that will is something. Every human has a superpower.
Mm.
And where they're really excelling and where life becomes all of a sudden. There's people who have hobbies. They build trains. It's whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
They're immersed and they're so happy with this. And that's what we have to somehow find, that we have
flow state is called, where you just get so into something that time whizzes by, you don't notice how much time's elapsed. And I think for a lot of us, we have not just one, but like a handful of things. Like I always say, like, I'm not the best musician or singer-songwriter or best crafter or whatever, but at all my different things that I'm good at put together, I'm the best.
Yes.
At the collection, you know.
That's a good way to look at it. The superpower within us is not related to success and fame.
It's creativity.
It's that part what really is what we got given
mm-hmm.
when we came to this planet. And,
totally.
And that's what we somehow should use and
mm-hmm.
and become a trailblazer for ourselves. Not if we have the success in mind,
right.
how other people perceive us, then we are already somehow into this world of the lower self. We are already there. And yes, we have to pay our bills. We have to do all these things in this world. But I don't necessarily subscribe to all of them.
Yeah.
I don't think we just have to accept them like this.
I don't either. And I think you know, it's not easy to be a trailblazer, though, because I think me and quite a few of my friends are trailblazing. We are never the ones who make the money off of the stuff. We make the original idea, and then someone else, like Joe, for instance, Joe Cardamom,
mm-hmm.
his band back in the day was wearing black shirts, red ties, pink eye makeup, and they had a little success. But then My Chemical Romance were huge fans mm-hmm. of them, completely just basically copied and ripped them off, and then made the music more poppy and mm-hmm. made millions of dollars.
But I have to say one thing. Joe Cardamom is, for me, one of the coolest dudes out there.
Oh, he is, of course. He's trailblazing.
He's more than a trailblazer. And he dances to his own tune
mm-hmm.
somehow. And the people that I surround myself with are these people who dance to their own tune, but not hurting anybody else.
Totally.
And not becoming grumpy humans that think
like
they're
bitter.
Entitled to something, you know.
Totally.
And Joe's approach to life and his visuals and his music are trailblazing, because he there's no act that I would associate with him. I said that this is a copy of that. Joe is really unique.
Yeah.
There's many people who are not unique. they maybe have a unique voice or anything like this, and but that's about it. The rest is just all regurgitated rock or whatever
we go with. Yeah, just things they've learned, redone. Yes. Yeah, I know. Yeah, Joe and I are kindred spirits. You know, we met in our early 20s, and like we couldn't tell what it was about each other, but you know, we've been like great creative partners and like best friends ever since then, after we tried dating, which was not the best idea. But, you know, at first when you have that soul recognition with someone, mm-hmm. you just don't know, like, what do I do with this? You know, like, yes. What is the purpose here? But, like, we've ended up, like, you know, doing that creativity thing together. And yeah, he's always been, like, kind of the visionary. And mm-hmm. I've had the, like, you know, I've been very locked into that flow state for a long time. Yes. To flow state it sometimes. And so Joe is a Capricorn. He's very grounded. He's good. Oh, nice. He's good at like grounding me and like telling me what to do, basically bossing me around, which I need, honestly. And I'm good at kind of taking him up out of the groundation sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool. We really balance each other out at times.
But it's also, I always believe that the holy guardian angel, it's just a strange word, but mm-hmm. my highest being, my experience over the years, it's usually the opposite gender of what you are. If you're male, right. it's a female. And out of this comes this union that gets to the greater point. And sometimes we meet people, we like him in the mundane, in the flesh and blood. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we are attracted to people. We have no idea why we aren't, but it's these holy guardian angels that are attracted to each other. And we just follow that. And it's usually much more difficult to understand that relationship. But with Choa, always, we talk a lot about philosophy and art and mm-hmm. things that come up about life that give you challenges and moments where you don't know where to go. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, we have to make the decision on our own. And if we don't have principle to stand on and we don't have any understanding about how we're going to go on, we follow usually the road of the lower self. The safety is right there. Yeah. Or this is where the fame is, wherever it is. And we mm-hmm. don't follow really what we should do. It's a human trait, I think. And with Joe, that the communication with Joe is brilliant. And I like when you have somebody that they have different belief systems and mm-hmm. they're still interested, very interested in yours. Because I learn more from somebody that has a different understanding than I do, from people who have the same understanding.
It's like, totally.
I don't learn anything from that.
Yeah.
And like talking to you here right now, it's for me, it's awesome because I always find it great when you see commonalities. Because we don't have that many things probably that separate us. We have some things, but we have a lot of things in common too.
Right.
And that's what we can work with. And that gives us respect towards each other. And that's, I think, is a good lesson in life.
Yeah, that's kind of what life is all about, is looking for the similarities instead of the differences. If we all did that, there would be no, you know, racism or bigotry or whatever, because I feel like that's just not even real, because when you get two people just in a room face-to-face, like, I pretty much doubt you're going to have some, like, KKK guy, like, by himself, just him and a black guy, like mm-hmm. just yell the N-word at that guy's face. Because when there's nobody else and like you just are looking at another human, like there's no difference between the two of you.
Yes. And my one of my great hobbies is boxing. Mm-hmm. I like to box and I'm a little bit older, but boxing is for me because you have fear. When mm-hmm. I go in the ring to spar, I don't fight any official fights anymore, too old for that. But mm-hmm. when you go into the ring and spar, there's a guy over there who also wants to knock you out.
Yeah.
But there's a tremendous respect for each other because that's why we're in the ring for. Yes, there's a referee, but eventually you and I have to fight.
Mm-hmm.
There's deception in there. There's strategy, tactics, and you get hit and it hurts. Nobody wants to get hit. Mm-hmm. I get hit quite often and it hurts tremendously. I would rather sit down and say, forget it.
Mm-hmm.
But I go through with it. And at the end of the 6-round sparring session, 8-round, whatever it is, it's awesome because I have respect for this person.
Mm-hmm.
Because he has the same emotions. He might be better than me, he might be stronger, he might be... But he has also emotions of fear. I said, oh, that guy can punch.
Mm-hmm.
But he also knows, Thomas guy over there, he can punch.
Yeah.
So there is something that gives us strength when we overcame our fear.
Totally.
And where we go into a very specific place where we are content with life again.
Yeah.
And so with most things that we experience when we have frictions with other humans, we can separate ourselves mm-hmm. or we can unify. The city where I'm from, Gräfelfing near Munich, or even in Africa where I stayed, is very small cities, mm-hmm. 20,000 people. Compared in LA, I feel like an alien. Who do I know in LA?
Well, you technically may be an alien based on your blood type.
Yeah, you are right. You could be totally right. But it's you can lose friends here and never see them again.
Totally.
In a small village, you can't. You have to live up to
this. You got to get with the tribe, or you get excommunicated, kicked out by yourself.
And sometimes we have to fight in the tribe. Sometimes we have to get our clocks clean. Mm-hmm. It's good for friends sometimes to fight really heavy because afterwards we're usually okay.
Totally.
But we still have to somehow hold together. We can't run away from it. And when we run away from it, our history, our past, will eventually catch up because we don't like to see this person anymore. We don't like to see this anymore. And that is not, in a sense, looking for salvation and redemption, because this makes it hard. And in your case, it's so wonderful how your understanding of your own way is so firmly embedded in you that you give life a go on your terms. And I love that. It's not coming just from ad-libbing or saying, this is how it be. Or look. Mm-hmm. So your own experience makes you act like this. And my own experience makes me act that way. And my parents, I grew up with my parents, and I don't know if they were always attracted to that lifestyle of Crowley, but they liked the idea of light, life, love, and liberty.
Mm-hmm.
And that you can dress how you will. I never quite understood why we do dress codes. If a person wants to wear an overall, like you are, like jeans, or if a woman wants to wear high heels, if a guy wants to wear high heels, why can't he dress the way he wants? What is it up to other people to decide what they should wear?
Right.
And on the other hand, it's the same thing. It's like, who can you tell who they fall in love with? If I fall in love with another guy or with another, I don't know, because these are all irrational movements that come from the lower self.
Yeah.
But I have to know myself, and I have to love myself somehow to make sense out of all this, that I can live a life that's rooted in my own understanding of it.
Truly. I think the place where it gets a little convoluted is with, like, trans people. They are saying that, okay, I'm of the opposite sex as I was born as, and now all of society must recognize that. Like, but how would society know unless, you know, you dress a certain way? There's some people who are just cross-dressers. Some people are trans. Some people are passing. Now there's something called other kin therians, who are people who believe they are the animal, but they have an animal soul. Mm-hmm. Now I just found out there's something called plantkins, who are human beings that believe that they're actually plant souls.
Yes.
So this is what is all leading to, as well as the, you know, 50-year-old man who thinks he's actually 7 years old and wants to take a 7-year-old, you know. There's people out on the internet who are defending pedophiles now.
No, I don't understand that. I don't want to go there because I don't have any love for that.
Gets a little bit crazy, and that's why I just think it's end time. So I'm just like, take it away, guys. Let's do it.
No, there's this Sodom and Gomorrah aspect to certain things, and that's like, we, even with sexuality, we have to be really careful how we do this. This can be an addiction. It can hinder. It's the same with, I always think, smoking cigarettes is already something that you
have to understand. It's probably a demon,
where we have to understand what you're doing. And it leads usually to other drugs, because addictive personalities go into addictive ways, and we all have our little moments where we become unreasonably addicted to something because it feels good. But we have to keep ourselves in check, and alcohol is one of those things that I think is devastating. And then we have prescription drugs and drug use.
I've been addicted to all these things personally, and it's all pretty bad. And it all, you know, I think what it is when this stuff gets away with you, it's because alcohol, they don't call it spirits for no reason. It opens your spiritual door. Drugs do it. And soon the demon, you become more demon-driven than self-driven. driven. And then next thing you know, you can't make that choice between, you know, you don't want to drink, but you have to do it anyway, you
yes,
know?
Yes, it becomes a habit.
Yeah.
Out of the habit comes addiction. And we have to master addictions. We have to be the master of ourselves, mm-hmm. especially of our body. And or we don't have to be, but we should be.
Right.
I always prefer somehow having a little bit of control over it, not going...
Well, but you lose the control is the whole thing, because it takes over the addiction. If you're truly like I go to AA now and mm-hmm. again, and they believe like if you're truly an alcoholic, you lose control after mm-hmm. that first drink or drug. And the only way to regain control is through this program, where the whole thing is aimed at finding a connection with God that you lose when you're doing drugs and alcohol.
Yes.
And there's a whole aspect of like, admitting your sins to like your
yes.
sponsor, and then you go out and you apologize to people who you've wronged, and then the final step 12 is just being of service. So it's sort of like self-realization, actualization, like mm-hmm. a back door version of getting to that, and it mm-hmm. just makes you become a good person basically. Because when you're in your disease of alcoholism and drugs, you're a liar, you're
yes.
sinful, you feel like a piece of shit because you act like one.
Yes.
And then AA just teaches you like, hey man, don't be a piece of shit, don't be psycho, be cool.
Yes.
And then you feel better, and it's easier to live without drugs and alcohol because you don't feel like such a piece of shit psycho.
Well, that's also where this know thyself comes from. When you know
right.
yourself, then you know your flaws. And then
totally.
You accept your flaws. And in Salema, very often people, because it's do what's your will, shall be the whole of the law,
mm-hmm.
they think, okay, well, then let me do all the drugs. Yes, you can do all this.
Mm-hmm.
You can gladly do all this, but there will be
consequences
of that. And those you have to understand. You can do whatever you want.
Right.
Go for it. But there's a price to pay.
Right.
And when you deal with those spirits and demons, they can give you all this, but love they can't give you, and the consequence of it will somehow be, if it's not now, it will be maybe in a year from now or 2 years.
Right.
There's a wonderful, I don't know if the name, George Christie rings a bell to you. He was the head of the Hells Angels for many years on tour.
No.
And I just saw one of his theatrical, he had this one-man show.
Mm.
And he talked about his life, what was really super interesting, because he experienced quite some things. And it was a wonderful, it was here at the Whitefire Theater on Ventura Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
And in the beginning, he said something that was kind of very simple, but it brought something across me again that I haven't saw it in years. It says, every action has consequences.
Yeah.
And some of those consequences take a lifetime to come back. If we mouse off now to a police officer, we most likely get arrested or get a ticket.
Yeah.
If we do something bad, maybe something happens tomorrow. But there's other situations where you do something bad and it takes maybe, we don't even know, 30 years, 10 years, 50
yeah.
years to come back. But it will come back because every action has a consequence. And it brought it back so much because he talked about his whole life, and he's, I think, in the 70s, and he talked about his whole life, and there we go. And he sits there and said, I paid a high price for this life. And there he knows his consequences. And would he do it different now, the second time around? Maybe. And that's in the understanding of when you know yourself, you might be able to live a life that you have a little bit more control over it, and you don't just follow the pattern. Let's
yeah.
just follow the lower self and do whatever is good for
totally.
Us to do.
You can live a conscious life instead of a reactionary life.
And isn't it that a respect for each other's religion and philosophy important, that we let go of our notions that my way is the best way?
Right.
We always think it's because it's my way, that's the right way. We
right.
think that because it's our idea, we think.
Yeah, it's a very annoying way to think.
Yes.
Really, the true, like, ascended master knows that, you know, all I know is that I don't know nothing. You know,
yes.
all I know is I'm not really sure. And the less I think I know, the more happier I'm going to be. Because, like, if I'm trying to enforce my ideas on everyone, like, I know you're supposed to be doing this because I just know everything. You know, you'll
yes.
be miserable because no one's going to
yeah.
listen to you.
And this is, I'm not a big fan of the movies, The Lord of the Ring, but there's this one scene where Gandalf makes sure that all his entourage, all his fellow travelers are safe
mm-hmm.
across the bridge. And there's Balrog, this giant demon. And he stands on this narrow bridge, and he says, you shall not pass. And the demon goes straight down into the abyss. It can't go up there, but it gets him with the tail. And he goes down with the demon in the abyss, and it takes a long time till he comes back as Gandalf the White.
Damn.
And there we go.
Yeah, I think that's a great place to end.
Yeah.
Thank you all for listening. Thank you, Thomas, for coming on the show.
And thank you for having me.
Go out into the world, spread love and not your butt cheeks. And special thanks to our producer, Jed Shepherd, and Post Pop Podcast. See you next time on Empath of Least Resistance.